You finally got just one or two children left at home after years of schooling your family. What's it like to be in this season of more time and fewer people in the house? Veteran homeschooler Mary Ellen Barrett is here to talk about schooling the last few in the nest.
Welcome to Homeschooling Saints, the podcast that helps you create the homeschool you love for the people you love. Our host is Lisa Maladnik, a Catholic life coach, TV host, best-selling author, and an instructor at Homeschool Connections.
Before we get started, remember to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're watching on YouTube, click the bell to join our channel. Hello, I'm Lisa Maladnik, your host, and today we're talking with Mary Ellen Barrett about schooling the last few in the nest. Mary Ellen, it's so good to have you back. You were the very first interview that I ever did on this show 6 years ago.
I know. Wow. It feels like forever ago, but it went like that.
Yeah. And a lot's changed. We've both kind of walked a lot of miles in that time. I've had you on several times over the years, but it's been a while because you got super busy with Seton Homeschool, which you've really done so much there. I want to talk about that at some point today. You've been really busy and really creative in that area, but you've also done a whole lot of homeschooling in these years. Would you just put us in the picture of how long and how many?
Oh, sure. This is my 23rd year of homeschooling. And so in the last 6 years, I've graduated seven. I had eight. So I only have one left at home at the moment who's being homeschooled. He's a sophomore. He's 16. He just turned 16 and he's the caboose. He's the last one left. So I have a 28-year-old daughter who's studying to be a pilot right now.
Wow.
She had a whole career in insurance and then she just decided she wanted to be a pilot. So she's going to flight school. It's really cool.
It was
kind of out of left field, but we're really proud of her. She's doing really well. I have a 26-year-old who's the director of music at our parish. She also teaches private lessons and stuff. She's the musician. I have a 23-year-old who is a hairstylist. I have a 22-year-old who's graduating from Ave Maria in May. And I have two 18-year-olds, one of whom's working full-time, saving up for she's trying to figure out what she wants to do in college. So she's saving money. And my other 18-year-old has developmental disabilities, and he's starting a work program soon through the state, through ACLD. So everybody's really busy.
Wow. I love that there's the whole gamut, too. This is one of the things we love about homeschooling, is that we can meet our kids where they are, and we can teach them this love of learning and even self-discovery that can be a lifelong asset to them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with all of these kids, everybody has done something different. They've approached their post-homeschool life in very different ways. There's been the traditional college kids. My musician went to college for music ed, but her homeschool was really focused on music. So we had opportunities to do orchestras and private lessons and travel for orchestras and things like that. So that was her high school was kind of all focused on that. And then my developmentally disabled child, he took as long as he needed to learn what he needed. And he had a different kind of curriculum than the other children have. And now he's going into this work program and it's very well suited for him and it's going to be great. And the one who's just kind of up in the air a little bit, she just went out and got a job and it's fine. She's 18. You don't have to know your whole life at 18. And I'd rather her focus on what she wants to put her efforts into rather than just go into college or something like that without knowing. You know, you want them to actually spend their time and their resources wisely. So that's what she's focused on. I'm really proud of her for having the courage to do that. You know, it's hard to see all your friends go off and do their thing and to be brave enough to say, oh, I don't know what I want to do. I'm not quite sure yet. And so, you know, take a step back and figure that out. 18 is not, you know, it's hard to make a decision about your whole life at 18, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm 65 and I remember very well going off to college with no idea who I was or what I was going to do and dabbling in a little of this and a little of that and then dropping out and then going back to school later when I was older, very focused, very motivated, clear about what I wanted and doing a really different job, you know, at everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And at, back then when I went to college and I'm close to your age, you could go to college and pay for it. And now you could go and not, you know, decide this isn't what I want, but you're $40,000 in debt for, you know, the first year or something. So it's really, it's important that you give them the freedom to kind of figure that out and not put like your own thing on it. Like to not say, oh, well, you have to go to college. You know, you have to do it in this time frame, in this timeline. That's not what homeschooling is about. And that's one of the things I've learned because I used to be that kind of focused. There's a rail, you got to run on it. You know, and now I'm not like that with the, and the older kids are all like, oh, you never would have let us. Well, you know, I grew in my parenting. So you don't parent the young ones the same way you parented the older ones, you know?
Yeah. That's a great point because I was thinking as you were talking that we also give ourselves permission over time. We start to see the fruits around us in our own family and the families in our community. And we start to give ourselves permission to listen less and less to the external pressures that say, you will have failed at homeschooling if your children don't go to a four-year college.
Right. That's so true because we start this when they're young and you think they're going to go to Harvard. We're going to provide this amazing education for them. And, you know, and then you find there are days where you wake up saying, I don't want to do any of this. So it's hard. It's really homeschooling is very hard work. And then you get to that, like launching them. And if they're unsure, you have to let them and their personalities and their talents and their gifts kind of shine. And sometimes that takes a little time and you have to grow in your parenthood well enough to know your child and know their abilities and be confident enough to say, yeah, that's okay. That's okay. You know, go work at the local diner or go work at the movie theater or whatever and figure it out. Take 6 months, take a year, figure it out. And we'll be here to support you however we can. You have to have that kind of confidence and that just grows as your child grows, you know. You don't have that when they're babies. You're always thinking, ah, I'm doing it wrong. You're not. I promise you're not.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The word confidence is so important here, too, because we don't know if we're doing a good job. And I think that's one of the benefits, I think, you know, like we were only able to have our one. And so every day was something new. Every day was a new way I thought I was messing up. And because I didn't have anything to compare it to. Once you've had your first few, like you said, you start to realize they're all different. They're all going to have different milestones and do it differently and different struggles and different kinds of successes. So thank you for using the word confidence because I think that a lot hinges on that.
Sure does. Yeah, I've grown to know that. Definitely. Yeah.
And I got that honestly from people like you and other families that I just listened to and watched and sometimes asked questions of. Because, you know, if people haven't, you know, you're just catching up with us and didn't hear that first few episodes of me or Mary Ellen, we're both in New York and we're in the same massive, wonderful Catholic homeschool network here on Long Island. And so I had a chance to learn from these amazing people and absorb even just being a more patient mother. Because I had my daughter so late in life, I was kind of a crank, you know, and I really needed to learn I never saw that.
And she has always been a delightful person, your daughter. So I never saw the cranky.
Thank you. Well, she did. Anyway, yeah. So what are you noticing for you as the homeschooling mom and, you know, maybe even for Dave, what are you guys seeing that's different for you? How is your life different now that you've got one yet to leave the nest?
Yeah, it's very different. It's quieter. You know, because mostly there's nobody home during the day. So he's very musical. So unless he's on his drums, it's very quiet in the house. And I find that I have much more free time. And, you know, when they're younger and you're just constantly pulled in a million different directions and you think this is never going to end, I'm never going to have 5 minutes to myself. I'm never going to be able to do anything else. And then suddenly, boom, like you wake up one morning and there's one left or there's two. Even when I had the twins, with Brendan, it was quieter and it was a much more relaxed pace because A, I knew more of what I was doing and what was important. And B, it was just easier. I don't know. It was just easier. I was in my groove. And now with just Brendan, he takes a few hours to do his schoolwork. He does it mostly on his own. So I'm there if he needs me, and I'm there to kind of direct things, but I'm not sitting next to him, having him read aloud to me or anything like that. So I've had more time to work. I've had more time to do things like my embroidery. I've had more time to volunteer at church. It's nice. It's kind of nice, I have to say. Yeah. It's just, yeah. And I'm still young enough to enjoy all of that. You know, so that's good. I'm not young by any means, but I'll be 60 when he graduates high school. I figured that out when he was born. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm going to be like this little old lady. And maybe I am, but I don't feel that way yet. So I feel like I still have something to contribute. And it's nice to have that time.
Yeah. Well, I'm just doing the math, and you're the age I was when I started my current career, which is why I'm retiring from the show, my coaching career. And so at approximately 58, I had no idea a whole new world was opening up to me, and a whole new world has really opened up to you as well, Mary Ellen. And I would love to tell people a little about that, because you built gradually when you still had a house full of kids. You started working for Seton. Do you mind just giving us a thumbnail history of that and tell us, because I know you're incredibly creative and I know I'm embarrassing you, but I want to hear about some of what you've been producing and the role that you're in right now with Seton. I think this is so exciting.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you. It started, I want to say about maybe 12 years ago. I was speaking at a homeschool conference because I had a blog that it was a homeschool focused blog, and it was kind of popular. And a few people would come and ask me to speak at their conferences. And I spoke at one in New Jersey, and somebody who worked at Seton, you know, he was there, and he said to them, the powers that be there, you should have her come and speak at our conferences, the IHM conferences. She was popular. She was good, whatever. And they did. They asked me to speak at them, and they realized I used a lot of Seton materials. So the next year, they asked me to come and work at their tables and help sell the books and help encourage mothers who are using Seton. And I started doing that. And I couldn't even tell you exactly how I ended up like in the office doing work, but I ended up hired somehow. And I work from home, and I go every 6-8 weeks. I spend 5 days, 6 days in the office having meetings and doing things like that. So I edit the magazine, Seton Magazine, and I'm with my partner, Ginny Seufert. We have a podcast that's sponsored by Seton, the State Homeschooling Moms podcast. And I also write curriculum and work on curriculum development. And I'm the chairman of the board of directors for the company. So it's just expanded in a million different ways.
Can you get any higher?
I'm telling you, I feel like I missed a meeting and they voted for me. And I was like, wait, what? Isn't there somebody better at this than me? It's a not-for-profit company. So we have a board of directors, and we meet a couple of times a year, and just to, you know, make sure that everything's going the way it should. And it's a really nice thing to be part of something where people are so committed to promoting the Catholic faith and solid education, solid academics. And I love being part of it. And they're truly good, prayerful, wonderful people who are very concerned about the parents who are enrolled and the students. They want the best for everybody. They actually do at 12 o'clock, this is cool, in the office, the bells ring and everybody goes into the chapel and prays the Angelus. And they pray for all the families, and they pray for Catholic homeschooling. And then at 3 o'clock, the bells ring again, and you can go and pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet in the office. So, I mean, that's so cool, right? To work for a company that does that. Every day, I'm so grateful. I'm really grateful to be part of this great work. So,
yeah. No, that's extraordinary. And God does anoint each season of our lives to a purpose. I mean, there was an emphasis when the children were younger. There was an emphasis as they were maturing and starting to leave the nest. And God was shifting you into greater and greater responsibilities there. And just think about it, too. I know you had a career before you raised your family, so you were already out in the world and very accomplished. But then, really, you know how to lead from inside a team. You and your husband are very team-oriented. I always feel like when I'm around you guys, there is such a sense of unity, even though everyone's different and there's all the things going on, right? But there's this sense, there's this Holy Spirit sense. And when I hear you talk about how it is to be a part of this very meaningful group of people who are co-laboring and mission-oriented and driven to really make a difference in the world, what a beautiful time for you to be able to lead in a new way.
Like I said, I'm so grateful, and it stretches me. You know, I've always been a writer, but to write things specifically for children or to encourage moms, and it stretches me, and I kind of love that. You know, it challenges me in a different way that I've been challenged before. And I think as I get a little bit older, that's good for me. You know, it's good for us to try new things and to constantly keep reevaluating our lives and saying, what is God calling me to be now? How can I use whatever gifts or talents or experience that I've gained? How can I use this to promote the faith, to promote God's kingdom on earth? You know, and for me right now, this is it, helping moms with young children who want to teach their children the faith and want to give them solid academics. For me right now, this is where I think God wants me to be, and to try and use whatever experience and whatever talent I have to help those families. And I love it. I love getting to talk to them. I love hearing their problems and what they're struggling with and trying to guide them and hearing what is working for them. And I can't tell you how much I learn from these moms, especially these young moms. They're so much more put together than I was at their age with their young families. They're just, I learn from them all the time. And that's also a gift.
Oh my gosh. It's so exciting to hear that. And I want to delve into some of the specifics of what your transition years have looked like too, Mary Ellen. But I also want to put in the show notes, just quickly before we take our sponsor break, you enumerated for me some of the books that you've written that are part of the Seton catalog, and you've created courses to go with them, but they can also be purchased separately too. So we'll provide the links to that information, but just give us a quick overview of those three books.
Sure. My favorite one was a kindergarten art and poetry course. So it, when you're enrolled in the kindergarten program, you get this little book, and it has a piece of art, classical art, and a poem that kind of relates to it, to the picture. And then in the lesson plans, there's a rhyme scheme. There's a little maybe finger play. There's a craft that goes with the artwork. There's all kinds of background information on the artist and who wrote the poem. And there's a lot of like Mother Goose kind of stuff, and then just some classical poetry. I have this firm belief that you should read to small children. You should read poetry to small children. And so putting that together was just joy for me. It didn't feel like work at all. I loved every minute of that one. And then I wrote a second grade geography book, which is called Passport to the World. So it explores... I think it's 18 different countries, and they get a little passport with it, and they get stickers to stick in it when they've studied a country. And it's all very faith-based too. So there's a saint for each country. And then I give a little information. Maybe there's a shrine there or something like that. And there's recipes and the lesson plan from each country and all that kind of stuff. And then there's actual geography, you know, this stuff that they need to know. Yeah. There's some coloring pages in it. And that was also a lot of fun. I love doing stuff for the little kids. And then I just finished a third grade art book, which has a picture study for each, you know, art and artist. And then there's an art project that goes with each one that's kind of related to it. So if it was the rose windows, I was having them study in the cathedrals, then I had them make a rose window on a piece of glass or something like that. So there were actually, you can see behind me, those are some of the projects that were, I found them on the wall as I completed them and photographed them. So there's a whole bunch of stuff there.
Mm-hmm, beautiful.
So yeah, I love doing it. And I never, ever would have thought that I would have been doing this kind of thing. And it's just great. And I'm trying to write the kinds of things that I would have wanted to have when I was a young mom with small children, things that would engage them, things that would, you know, get them excited about the subject.
I love how the Lord just brings back to mind and heart, right? It's almost like cell memory. Now you get to serve in a different way, and now it gets multiplied out to other families. So what an exciting transition.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm loving it.
All right, everybody, we will be right back to hear more about some kind of points and tips and things to look out for in this new season with Mary Ellen Barrett. We're talking about schooling the last few in the nest. We will be right back.
Hi, I'm Walter Crawford.
And I'm Maureen Whitman.
We are the co-founders of homeschoolconnections.com and proud sponsors of the Homeschooling Saints podcast,
which is here to help you homeschool more joyfully, more easily, and more effectively.
We want to thank you for listening.
And we invite you to check out our courses at homeschoolconnections.com.
And now back to our program.
All right, we are back with Mary Ellen Barrett about schooling the last few in the nest. We're having so much fun. Now we're going to go through some examples about what's really different in the home, in the relationship. Start us off with what's different for your student being schooled last and all that long line of people.
It's a very different experience for him than his siblings have had. He's a little bit introverted, so he's not a go-getter kind of person when it comes socially to things that are social. So a lot of his friends have either gone to high school. He had a very good friend whose father got transferred and moved to Ohio. And a couple friends have gone off to college. So he's a little bit on his own, which has been a struggle. So I've had to put myself out there a little bit and join some activities and get involved. We're trying to get him into some homeschooling groups here that are more local so he can find some friends. He got a job. So he works at a local restaurant as a busboy. So that gets him out. But he's not one to put himself out there. So I've had to push a little bit. You only need one friend. Like, you don't need to have 40 friends. You just need one, maybe two friends, somebody to do something with on a weekend, somebody to, you know, play a game with, somebody to complain about your mother to, whatever. You just need that one person, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's been a little bit of a struggle. And from what I understand, that's a very common struggle as you get down to the last one or two. He had built in people around all the time. He was never lonely. And now we're, you know, it's just the two of us knocking around. And apparently I am not scintillating company all the time.
That's not possible, Marianne.
And what's lovely is he and I are very close. Like, he comes to me, he talks to me, he shares things with me that his older siblings didn't do because they had each other more. And so I love that we have this close relationship, but he does need to have friends his own age. So we've been working on that, and he's open to it. So I think that's something people should keep in mind as you go forward. Try to keep that in mind, that you're going to have social outlets for your children, you know, if they aren't built into the day or if they're not on some kind of team or something. Like, he does karate. So that's a very, very singular thing. It's not like he's on a team. He does do Boy Scouts, but those kids are, you know, in school. So it's a little bit more of an effort to keep them social.
Yeah, yeah. And in some ways, that challenge, I think, stretches them in a particular way that can actually be helpful to them, too. Mm-hmm. I remember homeschooling an only child. Right. We were home a lot less than
I
think.
Yeah, you have the same thing.
Yeah, we were home less than most families because we were often connecting with other people to do the work or to do the fun stuff. You know, I probably should have been home with her more. But hey, we both needed to get out of the house.
Yeah. And you do. You do. Yeah. You had a similar experience where you had to make the effort to get her out of the house because otherwise you all just sitting home. And boys are different. Like, the girls, if you say, hey, we're going to go here and meet these people, they're like, okay. And I say that to him and he's looking at me like I have 11 heads. Or, you know, he has this friend who he serves on the altar with. He's an MC at church. And I said, oh, why don't you call this guy and like, go see a movie? And he looks at me like, what? Like, it was the craziest idea. But whereas my girls would have been like, yeah, all right, let's do that. And boys are just different. They're different animals when it comes to that. And so I've had to figure that out, too. You would think after four boys, I'd figure something out. But every one of them is different. And they're all new. It's all new. Every year is new. So we're figuring each other out, he and I.
Yeah, so good. So what does it allow, having one child home, essentially, at least during the day? What kinds of things are you able to do that you couldn't do before when there were multiple children at home?
Yeah, it's easier and cheaper to take in places. So we do, he loves to fish. So we've made that part of like our spring thing. Like, I'll drop him off and he'll go fishing there's a fishing boat where he knows the captain, he's worked on the boat. So he'll do fishing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we do go see museums and movies and things like that. We have a little bit more freedom. to do those things, because the work gets done quicker, because there's not, you're not being pulled in a million different directions. So we have that kind of freedom. We're going in June. We're going to do go to a camp up in Maine that we used to go when he was little with his siblings. And now he wants to go up there and do some whitewater rafting and things like that. So there's more freedom, you know, and the other kids are all like, ooh, I got to work. I can't go. Well, I wasn't inviting you anyway. So
this is really for him.
And the thing is, he has a very different experience than they did. You know, they've each had a different mother in a way, because you have to parent the kid you have at the moment you have them, right? And sometimes that's different. So they think he's being spoiled.
Well, is he, Mary Ellen?
Well, a little. A little. He's also very funny, so that helps.
He's charming his way out of things. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, he is. He's a charmer. He's got the smile. He knows it. The discipline is also very different, you know, for the, because you also figure out that not everything is a catastrophe. You know, kids make mistakes. They do stupid things. They, you know, we are fallen people, and you know, they're chaotic in their thinking, and as teenagers, especially young teenagers. And you learn as a mom or as a dad that not everything is, you know, going to send them straight to hell. There are ways to discipline that are more effective than just yelling and screaming and stuff like that. And again, you grow in your parenthood. So whereas I would ground somebody at the drop of a hat when they were older, for the older ones, this time around, it's more like, all right, well, why'd you do that? What do you, you know, what's going on here? How do we make this right? Oh, and here's some extra chores. Here's some hard work you have to do. One of the resources that I found very valuable as I've gotten older is Dr. Ray Guarendi's book.
Oh, yes.
The discipline book. I think it's Parenting with Discipline. I forget the name of it. He has some very good suggestions about how to discipline people effectively rather than just being, you know, I was raised by two screamers. They would just yell. And I always swore I would never do that. But of course, sometimes you're overwhelmed and you do yell. But I've gotten, you know, I just don't do that anymore because there are better ways. But the older kids view that as him being spoiled.
I don't hear any screaming, Mom. What's wrong? Right?
What's wrong with you? Why aren't you yelling like a crazy person? Who are you?
Yeah. So note to all young moms listening, you're going to have those days, but it gets better. So what about your marriage? What's different for you, the two of you, after all these years and all this really good, meaningful hard work? Where are you?
We are very fortunate. We've been married 32 years. We still love each other very much.
Which is very apparent. I've always thought so.
Thank you. And now again, you have more time. So, and we have some adults living in the house. So in October, we went to Ireland for 10 days. Oh. And you can do that. Like you can, you know, find a cheap flight and go away. My husband's an accountant. He's a CPA. So right now he's in tax season. And there are different tax seasons during the year. And so October 15th, one ended. And October 16th, I had him on a plane. Because we spent very little time together in the previous months. So we spent time in Ireland together. And you have more time to be romantic and to have conversations and things, almost to the point where it's like, all right, you know, stop sharing. We talked enough. Can I just watch my show? Or like, we are the least romantic people in the world. We're not. Sometimes it's just like, okay, that's enough. He asked me Saturday, he's like, you want to go out? We can go out for date night. I'm like, no, I'm tired. Stay home. But when, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been out the door before he finished the sentence because I was just, you know, overwhelmed by never getting to go out. Now it's just, we have a lot more freedom to do that. So if you hang in there, if you hang in there, it all happens. It really all happens. So you just got to try to maintain that friendship and that love and that romance until you get to the point where you can actually, you know, go out and do things together and spend real quality time together. It's important to try little ways to maintain that because the payoff is great. It really is.
Yeah. I remember one of the times I interviewed you, you were talking about, I think we aired it for Valentine's Day one year, and you were talking about kind of taking care of your husband and that relationship in the midst of all the heavy duty homeschooling. And I remember one thing you did, or a couple of things. I'm going to I hope I'm embarrassing you. You said it on the air anyway, so I can share. I was heating up a bath towel for your husband, so when he got out of the shower, he had a warm towel. Or laundering everyone's pillowcases and scenting them with lavender so that the whole family would go to bed that night with the scent of lavender, soothing them to sleep. Like, I almost want to cry saying that because, you know, everything that we go through in our lives, all the hard work, all the ups and downs, everything that we weather together stretches us in unseen ways as well as the growth that we can see in ourselves and in each other. But God is doing his work.
Yes.
And so every moment of grace that we offer each other, every time we fall flat on our faces and receive a little mercy from someone else, these things all matter. And so that persevering love, it's messy, but it can be incredibly sweet. And what you said, hang in there, I feel like should be hung on the door of every married couple's home. You know, hang in there.
Yeah, just hang in there. It does happen. I remember a couple of my friends have older children, and I remember being so like, oh, they get to go out, they get to do things, they get to watch a TV show. And I just, you know, I thought I'd never get there. And then by stages, you really do get there. And to your point with the warm bath towel and all these little things that you can do during the course of your day, having his favorite coffee like ready for him when he goes out the door, you know, in his to-go mug or whatever it is, he will remember that forever. He's not going to remember your sticky kitchen floor. Nobody cares about that, or dust bunnies under the couch or anything like that. Those are, nobody's going to look back and say, oh gosh, we had a sticky kitchen floor for 3 days. But he will remember that you took care of him in just that little sweet way. You know, he will remember, oh, she always did this for me, or that little thing. And I think that's really important. Those memories, those kind of things are what hang you together. You know, that's those are the ties that bind, those sweet little daily, not a big deal, not a lot of time gestures are what keep your marriage really healthy. I think that's been my experience anyway.
Yeah. No, amen to that. It is in the little moments. It really is in the little moments. They do add up. They matter. Just like every little prayer that we pray for each other really matters.
They do.
Yeah. So just as we're starting to wind down this conversation, Mary Ellen, this is my last interview on the show, and you were my first interview on the show. And it is so meaningful and momentous to me to have you back to wrap up this season as I leave joyfully.
I'm so grateful. I'm really grateful that you've asked me to do this, to be your send-off. You've done amazing work with this podcast. You really have. You've blessed so many people, and they've all been so lucky to have you. So you go off with this stellar record. You really do. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Marianne. It has blessed me immensely. And I really appreciate it, because we do really pray for our listeners, as you all pray at Seton for your families. We really take that seriously, too. And so we know they're praying for us, too, which has been really, really beautiful. But as we're just kind of starting to wrap it up, finally, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Oh, I would like to tell you that homeschooling is very hard, and it's a job. And the harder you work at it, the better it is. And it is entirely worth it. Whatever you do, if you homeschool till eighth grade, if you homeschool till sixth grade, if you just homeschool high school, whatever you do as a parent that you decide is best for your children, and you put your whole heart into it, I promise you, every tired, frustrated, crazy moment in your life is going to be completely worth it, because God is going to bless those efforts. He's going to bless them tenfold, a hundredfold, a millionfold. And you're going to have relationships with your kid and plant seeds in your children that are going to flower for generations. They really believe that. So hang in there, do your best, pray ceaselessly, pray all the time, and know that I am praying for all of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody, remember, you can find Mary Ellen at her podcast as well. Say the name of it again for us, Mary Ellen.
It's the Stay at Homeschooling Mom podcast. So we have a Facebook page, and you can go to the Seton website, setonhome.org/podcast, and find all the episodes there.
Yeah. And do check out Mary Ellen Barrett and Ginny Seifert's great show. And okay, so this is the last time I'll interview anybody on the show. Next time you'll hear Caitlin Zara, our new host, interviewing me. But what a joy it's been to be with you, Mary Ellen. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We are praying for you. Please pray for us, too. God bless you and have a beautiful day in the Lord. Bye now.
Bye.
And that's our show for today. Our program is sponsored by homeschoolconnections.com. Be sure to subscribe to Homeschooling Saints and leave us an honest review. God bless you, and thank you for joining us.